All right. Welcome, friends, to this fascinating interview. I already know it's going to be fascinating because our guest is a fascinating man. His name is Dr. John Diamond, and he is the host of the America Unhinged radio show, which is on Brighteon.tv each morning, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. And I get so much positive feedback about John Diamond. He is just an amazing individual. He's inspiring. He's also a truth teller. So some people aren't comfortable with the truth, but so what? You know, he's going to say it anyway. Dr. John Diamond, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on. Thank you for joining me today.
Brother Mike, I'll tell you what, I've been following you for a long time, long before we became colleagues here on Brighteon TV. My mom was a holistic nurse, and I've been in the anti-pharma truth category for a long time when you were the only voice. Really the only voice I could find out there. So I appreciate all you've been doing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was a kind of a lonely place for a while, but not anymore. Today, half the country suspects Big Pharma is trying to kill them, which is true, by the way. So anyway, thank you for joining me. It's great. Can you just give us a little overview of what you cover on your show? Your website is also AmericaUnhingedRadio.com if people want to go there directly to you. But what do you normally cover for our audience? Because this is the first time we've talked. What do you normally cover on your shows?
Well, I started off every day saying it's the show that's fervently patriotic and unapologetically Christian is kind of the overriding theme. But as we were talking earlier, I'd written a book back in 2006 called Fighting the Next American Revolution, trying to warn everybody where we were headed, and nobody really wanted to listen. Well, because of that, you know, I began praying several years ago. I'm like, why is it that nobody wants to help each other? And the Lord was like, everybody wants to be Moses and nobody wants to be Aaron and Hur. If you're familiar with that story, Aaron and Hur had to lift Moses' hands up so they got the victory. And he said, I want you to be Aaron and Hur. So ever since that time, that's exactly what I've been trying to do. So the people that I have on my show or people that have just put out books or releasing documentaries, I mean, anybody out there trying to either save humanity or tear down the deep state cabal. Anybody that doesn't have a voice, those are the people I interview. I probably interview more of those people than, you know, the real big name people that everybody else, you know, seeks to get. So that's what my calling is kind of be Aaron and Hur and help others fulfill their call.
Well, see, what I appreciate about you is that you realize that we all have to do the work, and there's something wrong with sort of mainstream Christianity in America and around the world today. I'd like you to speak to this, but so many Christians, it seems, want to just say, well, we don't have to do anything. God's going to save us. And therefore, we can just sit back and watch. And I don't think that's how it works. I don't think you do either. What's your take on that?
No, certainly not. I mean, very clearly, you know, it says we're the salt and the light. I mean, because of the fall of mankind, darkness and decay are the default conditions. If the salt and the light withdraws from anything, you know, the natural condition becomes darkness and decay. And for whatever the big reason is, if you understand the fivefold ministry, it says, you know, there's a fivefold ministry that's supposed to train the saints for the work of the ministry. Well, what the church has become is pastors training pastors for the work of the ministry. And that's it. And then everybody else is kind of sitting on their tail, not knowing what to do or how to do it. So you're starting to really see a resurgence in the kingdom mindset that we all have a part to advance the kingdom, whether you're in the medical field, whether you're in sports, whether you're in media, whether you're in journalism, whether you're in education. We're all supposed to be, you know, the salt and the light. We're all supposed to be advancing the kingdom, not just the pastors. And that's pretty much what it comes is the church, you know, has become kind of fat and happy, and all they want to do is sit in the four walls of the church, and they don't want to go anywhere and do anything. And that's really led to the downfall of this nation, I believe.
Well, right. And meanwhile, you've got the drag queen story time pushers that are out, you know, influencing, recruiting, grooming. They are out spreading their, well, I would say word, but it's actually, I think, their crotches, frankly. They're spreading in front of children in obscene ways, while, as you said, so many church leaders want to be in the safety and comfort in the four walls of the church. And it's like, wait a second, we got to get out there and stop this insanity. We got to protect the children in the real world.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I mean, the public schools are there's not an institution. You and I talked about, you know, somebody, I saw a Facebook post that says, what are you doing this fall? And I didn't realize they were talking about the season rather than the future of civilization. But that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. I mean, and it really just, I mean, it starts with the public schools. And you know, we got churches that just send their kids into the public schools. They're actively trying to convert your child into atheists and homosexuals and pedophiles. And I mean, it's insane. I had a couple other interviews today, and they're like, wow, that's a pretty good point. Jesus said it'd be better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck than to cause one of these little ones to sin. And when you're intentionally exposing your children to this and you know that it's happening, man, that's bad news there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Now, you talk in your shows about the fall of America. I'd like to ask you to kind of give our audience here some of the data points of what has convinced you that America is going to fall.
Well, I mean, you can either look at it historically or biblically, which is the great thing about really what my ministry is not only am I a theologian, but a historian. And I mean, if you just study the history of civilizations, every civilization, I wrote this in my book in 2006, that one scholar studied the 22 different civilizations that exist. And it said they've all fallen when they got to the point America was at today. And he actually said that like in the 1990s or something. So, When you look biblically, you know, God doesn't just turn his eye to this stuff. There's no way that we can continue, you know, ripping babies apart and molesting children. And I mean, all of the corruption and the lies that come out of D.C. and New York City with the deep state. I mean, God doesn't sit by and just, you know, like a big Santa Claus that's just writing down who's naughty and nice. I mean, Ben Franklin said very clearly that God judges nations. Thomas Jefferson said, I tremble for my country when I know that God is just and his justice doesn't sleep forever. So I've been very patient and long-suffering with this country, but we've done nothing but gotten 10 times worse since I wrote my book in 2006.
Yeah, except the one point is the overturning of Roe. Doesn't that count for something on the positive side? Or how do you think that falls in the big picture here?
Well, and I may be a bit cynical in this too. You know, I wondered why all that happened right about the same COVID is, and I'm hoping for the best that it is a good turn. But I remember when COVID started and they were talking about these vaccines, and I was just saying, you know, I'll say the same thing they've been saying now that Roe's been overturned. I mean, they're still slaughtering babies everywhere. I mean, it's absolutely illegal in Ohio and all the abortion clinics are still open. So we may have a technical ruling somewhere, but I mean, it's still being practiced pretty much all over the country, even states where it's not legal, but they've really taken away that argument, my body, my choice. So when they try to force vaccinate and you say, no, my body, my choice, they'll be like, oh no, Supreme Court ruled it's not your body, your choice. So I don't know. I think we're on a slippery slope. A lot of the things that you've been saying for 5-6 years almost seems prophetic at this point.
Yeah, no kidding. But when you think about the fall of America, what does it look like, or how does it proceed? Or what's the first, maybe another way to ask this is, what's the first big evidence that's undeniable that you think will appear in the minds of the people where they, even the oblivious people who don't even listen to interviews like this, well, they will say, whoa, something is not right here. Something just changed. Something just broke. What do you suppose that's going to be?
Yeah, when I wrote my first book, it was so big, the publisher told me to break it into several books. And one was called Fighting the Next American Revolution. The other is called Fighting the Next American Civil War. And this is what I had warned, is that we're trending towards both another revolution, which is basically, you know, kicking your government out and replacing it with another government. But that's probably going to take a civil war for that to happen. Now, how that goes, I've had several interviews today and with a little bit of conjecture. You know, I said when I ran for House of Representatives here in Pennsylvania, I said the Democrats know this is going to be a bloodbath. They're not going to allow themselves to lose power. I said, so whether they nuke a city and blame Russia, I mean, whatever it is they're going to do something. And I think that's really what could be the tipping point. So either they're going to do something before the election to stop it because they know it's going to be a bloodbath, or they could wait till the election's done and then do something and not allow those people to come to power on January 10th. Whatever it is, we've got a window between now and January 10th that I would really be watching these deep state rhinos and Democrats to see what they're going to do. Because if they do what we should have done in 2020 and decertify the election, if they get wiped out in a bloodbath in the voting polls and New York and California and Michigan and all these left-wing states say we're not going to certify the election, I mean, you could see Texas seceding. You could see Florida seceding. I mean, everything that happened, everything, Mike, that happened leading up to the revolution is happening to us again now. And everything that happened leading up to the Civil War is happening again now. And it's just such a weird convergence that all those things are coming together in this one little space of time.
That's a fascinating point that you just brought up here, that even after the election, there could be efforts by the Democrats to try to somehow stop the handover of power on January 10th. But now on the other side of that, I'm for a moment here, I might sound like Dr. Alan Keyes here for a second, but Alan Keyes, I think, would say, but the Constitution does not allow members of Congress to serve beyond their term. So they would be null and void after January 10th if they did not, I'm saying the existing seated members, if they did not turn over their seats to the rightful victors of the election, then they would be null and void anyway. But are you saying that perhaps the Biden regime could whip up something massive like world war with Russia and just suspend or try to suspend, you know, the Constitution? Right, the Constitution doesn't count anymore. We're just going to have power and declare war. And then what are you going to do about it? Are you saying that kind of situation could happen?
Oh, without a doubt. And one of the shows I was on today, I sent the host over some different public service announcements. And I mean, New York City, I think you know this because I think I read this on your site too. New York City's got these nuclear public service announcements giving the worst advice they could possibly give. Go in the middle of your room. I mean, but there's signs all over, and I've got the documentation I could show you. There's signs and billboards popping up all over the country about what to do in case of nuclear fallout, nuclear attack. And I honestly think I'm on record in during the Republican debate back in the primaries in May of saying that. I said they're going to do something. I said they'll create some false flags to try to take our guns. And the very next weekend, Buffalo happened and Uvalde happened. I don't think they're going to let go of power, Mike. I think they know it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. Looking at what Virginia just did, Colorado just overturned 80 school boards. The people are awake and they're active. I wish they would have been back in 2006. That's why I wrote my book, to try to get this level of activism. But now we're kind of swimming uphill, and they've got all the power. The Patriot Act, they got Homeland Security, they got FEMA, they've weaponized the FBI and the IRS and the CIA. And I mean, we're basically back to the revolution again, where the government really doesn't care about their constitution. People don't understand that Britain actually had a constitution, and all the founding fathers were doing was going, look, you're not even following the British Bill of Rights. You're not even following the Bill of, and they didn't care, because all three branches of government, you know, conspired. The king, parliament, and the courts and the judges, they all just conspired and said, we're going to do whatever we want to do to them, and we don't really care because we have an army. And that's right. And that's what Thomas Paine wrote right in Common Sense. He said the king with an army to support his tyranny. So I mean, when they got the power, they can do what they want, and then what do you do? Well, then it's on.
Well, and I want to clarify, you've used the term bloodbath several times here, but I think you mean the term in the context of a electoral wipeout of the Democrats. Is that
correct?
Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. An electoral voting bloodbath, not a actual death. And I mean, it may end up coming to that at some point anyway, if we end up going into a civil war of Russia and China attack or something crazy like that. But yeah, within the context of what I'm talking about, they know that the election's going to be a bloodbath. In other words, figure of speech, they're going to get wiped out. They're going to lose everything. They're going to lose the House. They're going to lose the Senate. And then Biden's going to be basically just a lame duck president who's not going to be able to do anything. And I think that's when they're gonna pull some kind of shenanigans.
Well, let me maybe counter that, or at least ask for your opinion on this angle about a so-called civil war. I've become increasingly convinced that the American people are too lazy and passive to fight anything. You know what I mean? There's so many people just laying back. And I mean, across political parties, you know, even many Christians too, they're just laying back and waiting for somebody else to come rescue them. And you see this in the Q movement in some ways, or you see it Christians saying, oh, the rapture is going to take me out of here. Or, you know, you see Democrats saying, well, the state will solve all our problems and so on. I see a lot of passivity, and I don't know how that would ever really change. It's like the work ethic even in, or the effort level of what people exert in this country is much lower than what it used to be, it seems to me. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, you got the Q movement that's lulling people to sleep that are, hey, we'll take care of it. We got it. The White House got it. Just sit there and do nothing. Then you got the rapture mentality that, hey, it's going to be like this. He's going to take us out of here at the last second. You're absolutely right. I mean, complacency and apathy is what got us into this mess. But I mean, what people never wake up and start until it starts touching them. And that's what we saw with COVID. You know, COVID reached everybody. We saw clear down to the school board level that we have no control of our government. So when you read the Declaration of Independence, and this is the sad thing about it, that it says that man is more disposed to put up with evils while they are sufferable. You know, hey, it's just a mask. All right. Even though it's tyranny, even though they have no authority to do it, you know, people will just put up with that type of stuff until it's unbearable. And that's what it says in the Declaration. It says, until we figure out that their whole objective is to enslave us, that's when people wake up and break free. And I think people are very close to that point right now, that they realize this has nothing to do with health. This has nothing to do with anything. This has to do with global enslavement by the hands of, you know, a few elites.
Well, and I would add to that, and, you know, of course, your comment on this is incredibly welcome. But I would add to that, you know, back in 1776, it was about being enslaved versus being free. But today it is about being annihilated. Today, you know, they want to mass murder humanity. So this is not about being free as much as it is about being in existence, it seems to me. So the stakes are even higher, and yet the apathy is also higher at the moment. But you think that something will trigger people to snap out of their spells or something?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a deep, deep, deep dive into the Revolutionary War and everything that led up to it. But I mean, that the argument there, you know, it's not just they're wanting to enslave us, they're wanting to annihilate us, because that's exactly what Britain was doing. Britain brought all these mercenaries over. You read it right in the Declaration of Independence. They were bringing mercenaries over to kill people. They were arming the Indians to kill people. I mean, they were flat out convinced that they were going to just wipe out by force anybody who resisted their regime. And I mean, and it wasn't just, you know, here's a few taxes, which is kind of what we're taught, you know, it was a tax revolt. No, it was not. I mean, they were bombing cities. They were arming the Indians. They were sending Hessians and all these mercenaries over and arming them. And I mean, they were just killing all kinds of colonists, anybody that rebelled against them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You're right. That was an extermination campaign. But even then, I think what's also interesting about that, it was what, somewhere between 3% and 5% of the colony population fought against the British king. I mean, it wasn't by any means the majority of the colonists who were actively involved in independence.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I'm pretty sure that it's going to probably take that same number. Me and Alan Keyes spoke out in an event in Pennsylvania, and Trevor Loudon got up and he said that number's actually wrong. It was probably like 1.5 to 2%, but either way,
interesting.
Let's just say it was 3. I mean, I think we've got 3% right now. You just look at all the people that are stirred up and fired up, and I interview them every day. You look at the Clay Clark events going all over. I think we've got 3% now, and now we just need to get them active.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you. There's more than 3% right now. And I think here's a question for you. I think a lot of Americans are wondering if we can take this country back at the voting booths, you know, peacefully in the midterm elections here, November 8th. And I think for many people, my guess is that this is their last hope. Like if these elections are all rigged because of just mass Democrat cheating, I kind of feel like in a lot of people's minds, that might be the last straw. What do you think?
Correct. No, I agree completely. And that really was the sentiment of the founding fathers. I mean, they wanted to do this as peaceably as they can. They appealed so many times to the king. I mean, the Revolutionary War didn't start on the day they signed the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it had been going on, at least from a Britain standpoint, attacking us for years before that. I mean, just Google the right and necessity to take up arms in 1774. I mean, the Continental Congress got together and said, guys, we got a right and a necessity to take up arms against this tyrannical government. That was 2 years before the Declaration of Independence. So, I mean, that's really what tyranny is just bullying. It's like, how many times are you going to let somebody push you before you smack them in the mouth? And that's where the colonists were. And that may be the point that we get to, that, you know, especially, you know, Christians and those who abide by the rule of law want to do this and appeal it and, you know, do everything we can peacefully. But, you know, when they start murdering people and taking people and putting them into camps, I mean, when is enough enough?
Well, we've already seen many states start to move away from federal control and towards what you and I would call federalism, which is really more states' rights, 10th Amendment type of rights, nullification of federal overreach. We saw that even in left-wing states with nullification of immigration, with the so-called sanctuary cities. And more recently, we've seen Texas declare, I think, an invasion is underway with the open borders. What do you think secession is going to look like? And do you think we're going to see more ramping up of nullification and even at some point just basically states denouncing even agencies, entire agencies like the IRS, for example?
Yeah, that's the whole central theme of my book. Because when I was in the military, I was in the Air Force during the Cold War, and I was in an Air Force leadership school the day the Berlin Wall fell. And when my commander came in and he gave us a speech there near the end, he said something that stuck with me my whole life. He said, "Don't ever come to me with a problem." He said, "Come to me with a solution." He said, "You're going to run into problems, but if you just come in with the problem, you're complaining." And that has really stuck to me. So when I wrote this book, I wrote out what the problem was, but then I also wrote the solution. And that is what I really hampered on the most, was the 10th Amendment. The federal government has no authority to do about 98% of what it does. All we got to do is tell them to go pound salt. All right. You were given power to coin some money and to create some post offices and make some treaties. Other than that, you know, we were supposed to run the internal affairs of each individual state. So it's their federal overreach that is causing all this. So, I mean, we can stay within the rule of law and just nullify, like you said, sanctuary cities. We can just nullify everything. We're going to nullify separation of church and state. We're going to nullify Roe. We're going to nullify all your, you know, your gas and your food, anything you're doing that you're not allowed to do. We're just nullifying it. And usually what you're going to find, though, is the problem is tyrants do not take kindly to that. So, again, if you go and you read the Declaration of Independence, it says one of the 27 complaints was that they came in and sent their armies in and they nullified, or they basically dispersed our houses of representatives for denying with manly firmness his invasion on our rights. So our colonial congresses would come together at the states and say, hey, this guy, they were basically used like the 10th Amendment. Hey, this guy's overstepping his authority. They have no authority to do this. We're going to nullify it. And then they came in and sent the armies in and put them under martial law. I mean, this is what tyrants always do, even when they're wrong.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. I'm really glad you brought that up. But I want to ask you about this interesting dynamic where the United States military is almost out of munitions because they've been sending everything over to Ukraine. So artillery rounds, you know, 155 millimeter rounds, anti-tank weapons, the man pads, and all kinds of things, stingers, you know, ground launch, surface-to-air missiles. Now, I understand the military is very mighty and has all kinds of, you know, tanks and aircraft and so on. But if there were a domestic war in the continental United States, and if the military were ordered to go to war with the American people, is it true that the military right now doesn't have the strength it once had? I mean, there was a group that even downgraded it to, quote, weak. I forgot the name of that group. I'm going to cover that. But the military is not as equipped as it used to be. Would you agree with that or disagree?
No, I absolutely agree, but I think they're doing it just so that they can let like China and Russia invade, because as a military strategist, you know, I'm someone who understands warfare, you know, what do you do before you go in and you actually invade? Well, you attack their supply lines. That's what they're doing with our food and our gas. They're vaccinating our soldiers and killing most of them or running the good ones out. I mean, our military is an absolute weak train wreck compared to what it was when I was there in the Cold War under Reagan. I mean, we were supposed to be able to fight two full-scale regional conflicts at one time, like Germany and Japan. We can't, every time the Democrats get in, they, like Clinton or Obama, they just weaken the military, and then the Republicans get in. And but I mean, the military's been so weakened. It's not the men, it's not their character, it's not their leaders, it's nothing like that. It's an intentional, basically softening up, I think, before an attack.
Do you think that attack is going to come from China?
I think China and or Russia, if not both.
Yeah. Well, that I've come to a similar conclusion just because, well, for the reasons we talked about here, so much weakening, and it's making America incredibly vulnerable. And then you've got seemingly Governor Newsom out in California is a Chinese communist ally. Like, he right. would welcome them, you know, here, have a beachhead. It's called California.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, that's the kind of thing. Now, again, if you want to go to the theological part of it, when I tell, you know, especially Christians are my major audience, and I'm like, look, if God didn't have no problem smacking Israel in the mouth and sending the Babylonians in when their entire system was broken beyond repair and wipe it out and, you know, give it, you know, 70 years to rest and then rebuild from that point on, go back and rebuild the temple and everything else. I said, don't think he won't do that here. God would send the Chinese in. He'd send the Russians in because Mike, I'm telling you, our system is as rotten as any government that's ever existed in the history of mankind.
It is. It's pure evil. It's global tyranny. But here's a question then about God's wrath. What does it look like when a nation is steeped in evil and has turned its back on God, but then there are individuals in that nation or even cities in the nation that are still pro-God and still honor God's word? I think, you know, if you look at the Old Testament, well, everybody gets hit, it seems like, usually, right?
Well, actually, if you actually read in Ezekiel, you see the story of the angel with the inkhorn, and he says, go out through all the nation and seal on their foreheads those who are crying out against the abominations, and they were saved. And then he said, now that you've sealed everybody, now go slaughter everybody and start at my temple. So they started at the church and went everywhere else. But before that, there was a ceiling. There were people who were protected because they were crying out against the child sacrifice and everything else. And that ends up being Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. Remember, they all went into captivity into Babylon. They weren't killed. They didn't partake in the slaughter, but they were saved in the midst of it. So what I think is going to happen in America here, I think it's necessary. That because the only way to root out these evil, corrupt, you know, child trafficking, murdering infant baby people, the only way they're ever going to get rooted out is by that type of war. Now, let me just say this as we get close to wrapping up. But I don't know if you've ever read George Washington's Three Prophecies of America. You could Google it. Son of the Republic, I think, is what it's called. But he was sitting in his tent in Bunker Hill, and an angel came in and said, Son of the Republic, there are three great crises coming across to America. And I'm going to paraphrase it because it's kind of long. The first was a Revolutionary War. The second one said he saw a specter come out of Africa and come over and basically create a civil war. And then that happened. He said, but the third one is going to be the worst because America is going to be invaded by a bunch of different nations and cities are going to burn. He said, but then the specter is going to leave and then the people are going to rebuild and the republic will remain. So I think that really ties into exactly what you're saying. I think if the Chinese come in and they take, you know, California, Washington, Oregon, they'll welcome them right in there. And they think they're going to be their friends and, you know, they never do and never are. They're just going to be murdered and enslaved and everything else. So I think, you know, the Bible says there's a time for peace and a time for war. I didn't write that. You know, sometimes war is God's way of rooting out the wicked evil that can't be rooted out any other way. He did it to Israel. I don't know why we think we're not susceptible to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a real shock to all those left-wing Californians when they welcome the communist Chinese in, and then they end up getting raped and murdered. And they're going to be really surprised. Like, oh, we thought communism was awesome.
And we were talking over the weekend at that event where they were talking about the red-green axis, the alliance between the communists and the Muslims. That's what the red and the green is. And I said, well, I see it as a three-way axis, the red-green rainbow axis, because the homosexual movement's in that same boat. I said, the thing these homosexuals don't understand is once the Muslims and the communists come to power, they'll wipe them out, because all they needed them was for just to put them in power. Same thing Hitler did. So, you know, it's just like every bad movie you ever see where the evil people come together and conspire, and then they end up killing each other, because right. that's what evil people do. So I think it's going to take that type of, you know, destruction, and these evil people are just going to have to be rooted out. And sometimes that's just the way the Lord does it.
All right. Well, final thoughts here as we wrap this up, Dr. Diamond. And by the way, I just want to thank you for taking the time this evening. I understand you're traveling tomorrow. You're speaking publicly. But what are your final thoughts of what people need to do to prepare for what you believe is coming?
Well, just like the angel with the inkhorn in Ezekiel, those who are crying out against the abominations, you do it. I do it. You know, those who are slaughtering people with abortion, those who are pushing transgender stuff, those who are killing babies, killing people with syringes. And, you know, we need to be crying out against this stuff. And that's the problem, is people think if they just keep their mouth shut and hide in a corner, then, you know, this won't come upon them. Well, it's coming upon them because they sat in a corner and kept their mouth shut. So if everybody would just cry out against all the abominations, You know, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the seal. And if it comes that he has the ability to protect us, when all this started, the Lord gave me that scripture, 1,000 may fall to your left hand and 10,000 to your right, but it won't come upon you. So we just gotta rely on God's protection, that he hides us under the wings of the Almighty, the shadow of the Almighty. But we only do that when we're in right relationship and right covenant relationship with him, and we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Then, like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we may have to go through this junk, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be the ones, you know, killed by it.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. All right. Well, let me give out your website again, AmericaUnhingedRadio.com, folks. And that's where you can find Dr. John Diamond, and also on Brighttown.tv. 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. That's the America Unhinged radio show. And Dr. Diamond has an amazing guest, very frequently has a pretty awesome guest. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Diamond. It's an honor to be able to interview you. I hope we can do this again soon. I want to wish you safe journeys for your trip tomorrow.
Amen, brother. I appreciate finally getting on here to talk to you. Let's do it again.
We shall. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, brother. You too.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.